Du lytter til Get Connected, en podcast fra os i Connector. I podcasten taler vi om ledelse og organisationer. Vi forbinder praktiske problemer med faglige forståelser. Vi ser på tendenser og udfordringer, på erfaringer og forskning. Alt sammen inden for ledelse og organisationer. Mit navn er Michael Elgen, og jeg er din vært. Velkommen til Get Connected. I dette afsnit taler jeg med professor Henry Mintzberg om hans bog Understanding Organizations Finally. Derfor er dette afsnit også på engelsk. God fornøjelse.
So my first question would be, can I just call you Henry?
Yes, absolutely. I always say that. Mr. Mintzberg was my father.
Henry, so delighted to have you here. And could you, just for the listener who don't know who you are, just put a few words to who is Henry Mintzberg?
I'm an outdoorsman who likes to write books. I guess you could say that. Not so different in Canada from Scandinavia in our sort of lifestyle. And I think we have a lot in common.
And the reason why I reached out for you was because you have a new book out called Structuring in Sevens, Understanding Organizations Finally. And I believe the word finally struck me when you wrote it, because you yourself had written 20 books around that about management and organizations, and every year there are new books about organizations. So what is this finally about? Could you just say a few words about that?
Yeah, my most successful book, my second book, was called The Structuring of Organizations, or in short form, Structure in Fives. And it was my most successful book, but not successful enough. It was not successful enough in the sense that we don't understand organizations. And, you know, we live in organizations. We surrounded by organizations. Everything we do, or almost everything we do, is organizational. And yet we don't understand them, and we don't understand the differences between them. So this is a sort of last shot, maybe not my last book, maybe not my final book, but my final effort to get people to understand organizations.
You also wrote some books about management or leadership. How would you approach the difference between understanding the organization and understanding leadership if you compare the two, organization and leadership?
Well, I don't like to use the word leadership without management. So, because I don't think leaders are separate from managers. Good managers lead and good leaders manage. So we need to keep we need to keep that clear. And they manage organizations. So these are two sides of the same coin in a way. You've got to understand organizations to understand management. You've got to understand management to understand organizations and the role of management. So I'm probably viewed more as a management theorist, partly because that term is more common, but also because my earliest work was about the nature of managerial work. But I'm really more of an organization theorist, I think. I'm an organization studies person. I'm particularly interested in how organizations work and why, and so on and so forth. Management is a big part of that. But I've also written about strategy, which is a big part of that, and about management development, which is a big part of that, and so on.
And in all that, when you go out and meet organizations that I understand you still do, and you have some examples in your book, do you believe that leaders also, or leaders, managers, that they understand their organizations?
The good ones do. I mean, how can you be a good manager without a sophisticated understanding of what you're managing? And the first thing you're managing is your organization. Not only you're managing its relationship, its situation in its environment, and so on. But so I would almost word the answer a bit the other way, that managers who don't understand organizations don't understand their own organization, and for the purposes of this book, don't distinguish between different kinds of organizations, can't be very effective.
And you also, I believe you have a very great metaphor in your book, the part where you ask the question if we could see our organization as cows, or if we draw an organization, usually people, they don't draw like a being or an entity of some sort. They draw the diagram or the organogram of the organization. So what is the idea or the concept of organizations when you meet an organization?
Well, the idea of the cow, which comes from an ad from a high-tech company, is that the ad says, you know, shows a picture of a cow with the markings where it would be butchered and says, this is not a cow, this is an organization chart of a cow. And the question you have to ask yourself is whether you want your organization to run like an organization, or run like a chart, or run like a cow. So it very decidedly makes the point that the chart is not the organization. It's one dimension of it. It's who reports to who and who's got power and who's the boss and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't tell you how people talk to each other, how they interact with each other, how they relate to each other, and so on. So you know, cows are able to function without charts, and we're like cows too. In our bodies, we can function without charts. And you know, the bowels don't have to get instructions from the heart, and the lungs don't have to dominate the bladder. So the parts just interact in very natural ways. Why can't our organizations do that? Why do we run into such a mess? And it's partly because we're so fixated on these charts.
And what would you recommend for leaders who would like to understand their organizations more, as if we stay in the picture of, if they were to understand their organizations more as cows than diagrams?
Well, that's the leading question. They obviously have to read the book.
okay.
But that's a different way of saying that they have to find sources of things to read and expose themselves to, like this podcast, that give them more insight into how organizations work.
And do you believe that this is the actual overview of how organizations work? Because I also feel that there's some parts of the book where you say, well, maybe we can't kind of have the truth about organizations, but we could get really close to what it looked like.
Yeah, well, it's not up to me to judge whether the book will do what I want it to do. It's up to the audience and the market to decide what the book will do. But I do say in the book that there's no truth. All theory is false or partially true because it's not reality. So you can always go beyond and do more and do better and so on and so forth. I hope I've come close.
One of the things that I think is really interesting in your book is your notion of the forms and forces that you work with in your book. Could you try to explain what is the, because you have, it's called the structures in sevens, but you also have seven forces that the organizations work with. How do I recognize a force in the organization if I were to go to look on my organization?
Okay, so initially I build the book around four basic forms. To me, these are the most fundamental forms of organization. One I call the personal enterprise, like an entrepreneurial company. One I call the programmed machine, like a factory, an assembly line factory. One I call the professional assembly, like a university or a hospital. And one I call the project pioneer, innovative. So if we take restaurants, for example, a personal enterprise is the corner, what we call greasy spoon in English, you know, a little diner with the boss hovering around doing everything or much of it. A program machine would be McDonald's, any fast food chain. They program everything. They've got us programmed to clear the tables, for goodness sakes. You don't clear the table in a gourmet restaurant, which is a professional assembly. I use the word assembly because the professionals work together, but they kind of work apart too. They work individually, the way I do as a professor and the way physicians largely do in hospitals. So it's a gourmet restaurant is very professional. The person who takes your car is a professional, chefs and everybody else. And the project pioneer would be a catering where it's customized to your particular needs. And you can ask for all kinds of crazy things in a catering. So those to me are very, very basic forms of organizations. I talk about three others. Divisionalized form, which is really a variant of the machine form, I think, where you have divisions. I talk about a community ship where a culture dominates and the organization is very ideological. And I talk about a political arena where everything breaks down. And then basically, there's a force to correspond with each form. So the force in the personal enterprise is consolidation, that the chief consolidates. The force in a program machine is efficiency, and the force in a professional organization is proficiency. And in a project pioneer, it's collaboration and innovation. And in a divisionalized form, it's the idea of focus on divisional autonomy. And in a community ship, it's culture, and in a political arena, it's conflict or politics.
In those forces, when I think of modern organizations, some of them have a complex that they're trying to solve, the part where you both have to be part of a capitalistic growth mindset, that you have to be efficient and you have to gain market and gain value. And on the other hand, you have to be a sustainability, very morally right organization. And sometimes you can't be kind of both, I believe. But how do you see that? Is the also when I see on the literature on organizations, it's like there's a ground premise on the way that we look at organizations, that they have to be efficient and they have to be kind of in this capitalistic paradigm where growth and efficiency and lean organizations are the ideal organization.
You know, all organizations have to attend to all seven forces. You can't imagine an organization without efficiency any more than an organization without conflict. They're all there. They're all present. But sometimes one or more dominates. One dominates, as in a fast food restaurant, where efficiency is clearly above everything else, and an advertising agency where collaboration and innovation are above everything else. Sometimes there are hybrids, like a symphony orchestra, where the conductor has more power than a dean does in a university or a chief does in a hospital, but not as much as in a fast food franchise or an entrepreneurial firm. So it's a hybrid. A symphony orchestra would be a hybrid, a very, very professional. And it's an assembly. They don't play to the conductor. They play to the composer. It's the composer. They're looking at the composer's notes. If you're playing the bassoon, you're playing the bassoon. I don't know if Tchaikovsky wrote for the bassoon, but you're playing for the bassoon the way Tchaikovsky wanted you to play for the bassoon. But the conductor, in rehearsals, much more than performance, pulls it together. So you have hybrids and so on. Too much efficiency, and you drive everybody crazy. Too much proficiency and you drive your customers crazy because, you know, the operation was a success even though the patient died. So too much innovation can be just as dangerous as too little innovation.
By that, I hear that maybe, and that would be my interpretation and not what you're saying, but are we being too idealistic about our organizations, that they have to be perfect in a sense, and we don't see the complex organization that you talk about, where all forces are at work at once?
The pure machine or the pure project or the pure professional organization, whatever, are doomed. They're doomed because they don't attend to the other forces. They don't counterbalance. You know, if you're so efficient that you have no innovation, that you have no collaboration, you know, that you have no proficiency at all, just efficiency, then you're doomed. So, you know, and the idea of capitalism and sustainability, you have to look at that in terms of each of the forms, because they'd be quite different. The community ship is the one farthest away from capitalism in a way, because it's all about community and it's all about working very, very strongly together. Whereas in a machine kind of organization or program machine kind of organization, I mean, that's where bottom lines and all that silliness applies most, is least silly, still silly, but least.
And why do you call it silliness, bottom lines?
Well, because it's obsessional. And then, as I said about efficiency, any obsession is dangerous. And the obsession with the bottom line is dangerous.
It makes very much sense to me, but I know some people will be wondering about the difference between the private and the public sector. But you also mentioned hospitals right now, or the symphony orchestra. But do you believe that is there any difference between overall in the private or the public sector between your seven forms and forces? Are there any downsides or upsides or something that's stronger than on the one part or the other?
Well, in principle, public and private organizations are different in all kinds of ways, but not in terms of these four forms or even seven forms. You can find all of them in the public sector and all of them in the private sector, and for that matter, all of them in what I call the plural sector, meaning community sector or civil society sector of NGOs and so on. So you can find all of them. You can find, startup, no matter where you are, no matter which sector you are, you're starting up a new NGO, non-government organization, or you're starting up a new government department, you need a personal enterprise to do it. You need a very, very strong leader to bring it together at the beginning. Otherwise, it won't take off effectively. So you need that. Of course, it's most common and most known in entrepreneurial companies. But these days we use the term social entrepreneurship almost as much as private entrepreneurship. And social entrepreneurship is the plural sector. It's starting a new NGO or starting a new social movement, whatever it is.
So if I were a leader manager in a hospital, how would I approach your book and your seven forces and forms?
Yeah, well, first of all, in the United States, at least, not so much in Canada, maybe Denmark, but in the United States, you have hospitals that are public, private, and plural. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is most of them are plural. They're called voluntary hospitals, and most of them are plural in the sense that they have no investment, no investors, and they're not government-owned. Whereas in some countries, in France, a lot of them are government-owned. Canada, they're technically not government-owned, they're government-funded, but most of them are plural sector. They're autonomous organizations, but obviously controlled because they take so much money from government. So if you're running a hospital, it seems to me the professional assembly captures it most accurately. And in fact, my earlier book, Structure and Fives, was particularly popular among healthcare people because they thought it described hospitals very well. People work on their own. But if you're a private sector hospital, you're going to be driven to efficiency compared with proficiency more than if you're in a plural sector hospital. Because in the plural sector, you have more freedom to attend to proficiency. Whereas if you have a board in a commercial hospital coming from, headquarters or something, you're going to be pushed to get more profit, which means more efficiency. We just had a report in Canada a few days ago that demonstrated that doing public sector healthcare in private hospitals is much more costly than doing public sector healthcare in public or plural sector hospitals. That the commercial hospitals want to make money. Either they charge more, they charge the government more, even for providing services to the government, even though they're being paid by the government, they charge the government more, or they find ways to sneak in extra charges on their customers, their clients, like medications or tests or whatever it is.
And is that the efficiency that has gone too far?
That's the implication of that finding. Yeah, that's the implication of that finding. The governments, like everywhere else, are overwhelmed, especially to catch up after COVID, by the needs for surgeries and so on in hospitals. And so they're turning to private hospitals and so on to supply those services. And this points out that it's a lot more costly to do it in the private sector than it is to do it in the plural sector.
And how would you approach any organization with a strategy and use your seven forms and seven forces? Is it possible to kind of form a strategy from that approach, or is it just an add-on to understanding the organization?
No, I've got a section in the book that talks explicitly about managerial work in each of the four forms, decision-making in each of the four forms, management development in each of the, managing in each of the four forms, and strategy in each of the four forms. In a programmed organization, this is where you find strategic planning most. But it's not strategic planning, it's really strategic programming, because the machine has a given strategy. It doesn't vary its strategy. You don't change the strategy of a machine very much or very easily. So it becomes what we call strategic planning is really strategic programming. In a personal enterprise, it's largely visionary. It's about the vision and the broader vision of the owner or the chief executive. In a professional organization, strategy is actually upside down. It's completely different. It's, you know, my university looks like other universities. Hospital probably looks like other. Your general hospital probably looks like other. Strategy is not distinguished that much, except for where it does it. Yours does it in Copenhagen and mine does it in Montreal. But what distinguishes them are these ventures on the part of professionals. So in our hospital, maybe we have a special lung division because some pulmonologist championed a new special lung division. And in Copenhagen, maybe it's, I don't know, multiple sclerosis center or something. So that's how they distinguish strategy. So strategy is the sum total of all these ventures that are championed largely by the professionals themselves, not the administration. In a project pioneer, strategy is the outcome of the projects. Each project determines or adds to or takes away from the strategy that has been developed by all the projects over time. So a consulting firm strategy like yours is probably a sum total of your successful projects. You tried this, you tried that, some things work, some things didn't. You keep doing what works, you do less of what doesn't, and your strategy keeps unfolding according to your projects.
So it's not just a one-off strategy that you have to make. You have to keep up with your strategy and revisit it.
Yeah, strategic planning is an oxymoron, even in the professional, even in the program machine. But it's dysfunctional in all the others, and it's dysfunctional if you think that's the way you get strategy, even in a program machine. You learn strategy, so you got to get away from the programming in order to change the strategy, even of a program machine. Sometimes you'll bring in a very strong leader and in effect turn it into a personal enterprise to change the strategy.
In all that strategic planning and leadership and management, there's one thought that comes to me often, both in my work and when I lecture about organizations, that's the idea is if I'm in an organization or if I'm part of an organization.
Interesting question, because it fits rather well. In a community ship, you are part of the organization. You are the organization. You're part of the culture. They don't even let you in or let you stay unless you're totally immersed in the culture. The other extreme would be a program machine where easy come, easy go, hire the workers, fire the workers. So there's not the same commitment. There could be. You have program machines that have strong cultures, but you have many that don't. So it could be. So you're in the organization. I mean, I remember being in a factory once where they pointed to the workers in green as being on contract and the workers in blue as being part of the company. So they were doing the same thing, but some were outsourced and others were not.
So some would be feeling that they were part of the organization and some would be that they were in the organization.
Well, the outsourced ones would certainly be in and not part of, but even the insourced ones might still be just part of it because they don't necessarily feel a strong commitment. They may or may not. In a professional organization, too much too often is in. The physicians are easy come, easy go. You know, I'm happy to work in this hospital, but if I get a better job somewhere else, out I go. So don't bother me with having to do administrative work. Don't bother me with having to contribute to needs of the hospital itself. But there are plenty of professional organizations that do have strong cultures and people are part of it. And in a personal enterprise, you are part of it often because you're beholden to the leader who's probably very charismatic or maybe very charismatic. In a project organization, I think you're part of because you have a lot of power as a specialist or as a you know an expert in the field. But you can also leave quite easily.
And how would I approach that as a leader in my organization? Because some leaders believe that the motivation and the engagement and being part of the organization is very important, and others, maybe the leaders who feel more like managers, they think it's okay to have people coming and going and being in an organization. So is there one or the other preferable, or is it just, let me reframe my question, because I believe there's a lot of leadership today that is about the relations with your employees, about psychological safety and all these terms about the relations with inside the organizations, which would make me feel more part of the organization and be more motivated, and not a work-life balance, but more a life in its total. So, Julie, is there one or the other that is preferable, or is it just analyzing your organization to figure out what it is?
Well, you have your choice in a way. You can manage for the short term and push to get more and more profit, especially if you can run away with your bonuses, you know, then why not do that? But to sustain an organization, you really have to manage the culture. And the word I like is communityship, not leadership, but communityship. That an effective organization, a sustainable, decent, functional organization is a community. And people feel like they belong and they feel committed, and so they function well. And that's what the secret to the Japanese success was, especially in the 80s. They engaged their workers. If you don't engage your workers, don't expect much from them.
Very well said. But so it's not one or the other. It's more like what kind of organization would you like to have, and the kind of leadership, just to understand what you're saying, the kind of leadership and management that you offer your organization will be kind of the organization that you get.
Yeah, but it's also what kind of organization you need, because you do have choices and you can vary things. But look, if you're mass producing automobiles, you're not going to have a project. You'll have projects in the organization, but the bulk of your organization about assembling cars and fabricating parts and all that is very programmed machine. You don't have much choice. If you're a hospital, you may have project work and research, and when things go wrong, COVID forced, just discussing yesterday with some doctoral students about COVID for turning a lot of hospitals, the ultimate programmed assemblies, into one big project. How do we deal with COVID? And all these sub-projects. So you had to do a really sharp conversion. But normally, you would function as a professional assembly. That's what's natural for the kind of organization you are. But as I said, in restaurants, you have a choice. You can be a greasy spoon or a gourmet restaurant, catering, whatever, you know, McDonald's, whatever.
And when you say what your organization need, what do you mean by that?
Well, needs in terms of the situation it's in. Does it require customized products, for example? Do you have to customize, like in much of consulting, do you have to customize the work to your clients, in which case you can't be a program machine or even a professional assembly. You have to be a project organization. But if you can standardize, then you can be either standardized with very simple work, like a supermarket, then you're a program machine. If you're standardized for very complex work, like a hospital doing open heart surgery, standardized but complex, then you better be a professional assembly.
So the leaders and managers in all organizations also have to understand the environment that their organization is in.
Yeah, they have to read the book.
Thank you so much, Henry. I believe that could be one of the final words. Is there anything that you feel that we missed out on, points or ideas that you would like to emphasize here in the end?
I'm sure we missed out about 4 more hours, Michael. But
it could be interesting. I can feel that, but Henry, if we should just sum it up, what would be two takeaway key points from our talk here?
I think it's just be much more aware of your situation, and don't, you know, every article in the Harvard Business Review should have a skull and crossbones on it saying, warning, not to be read by people in professional assemblies, or not to be read by people in program machines. Don't get fooled by what's hot, what's fashionable.
Thank you so much, Henry. Thank you for your time.
Hey, Michael.
What I'm most delighted about, Henry, is to meet your sense of humor. Because I feel that it's I will read your work in a different setting from now on, because I feel that you have a very lightful taking on life itself.
Thank you. Is nothing still wrong in the state of Denmark?
Oh, we'd miss that. Could you say a few words about that? Is that okay?
Well, when I visited the Copenhagen School of Business some years ago, I had time to go around Copenhagen and a bit of Denmark and so on, and I wrote a blog called Nothing's Rotten in the State of Denmark. You can see it on minsberg.org/blog. If you search on rotten or on Denmark, you can find it. And essentially what I was saying is that no country has it perfectly, but Denmark and the Scandinavian countries in general, I think Canada not quite as close but not far away, really have their act together in terms of balance in society.
And your idea of nothing rotten in the state of Denmark is that we actually do it okay.
Yeah, we have a bridge with 250,000 bicycles going back and forth every day, whatever the number is. Yeah.
So what could be wrong?
Yeah, I'm a big bicyclist.
There's a sentence I use a lot when I work with leaders, is that you cannot choose not to have problems, but you can sometimes choose the problems that you would like to have.
Yeah.
I hear that in what you're saying, that we're not doing it wrong, but we can't do it right because there's no right.
Exactly. There's no perfect. There's no magic formula.
Thank you for taking your time for the conversation.
Okay, Michael. Nice to chat.
Bye.
Du har lyttet til Get Connected fra os i Connector. Vi håber, du fik nye synsvinkler, gode idéer eller inspiration til at gøre verden til et bedre sted, og at du fik én ting med til at gøre hverdagen lidt nemmere eller skabe nogle nye sammenhænge. Vil du gerne møde os fra Connector, så besøg os på connector.dk. Mit navn er Michael Elkan, og jeg er vært på Get Connected. Tak for nu.